Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, December 23rd, 2025. It is 9 a.m. We're all here for the regular meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board Employee Retirement System of the City of Milwaukee. Can I have a roll call, please?
Mr. Christensen?
Here.
Mr. Duclain?
Here.
Ms. Ford, excuse?
Here.
Oh.
I'm here.
Okay. Mr. Helly?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Here.
Mr. Conrad?
Here.
Mr. Kovak?
Mr. Kovak.
Here.
Williams?
I do have to leave early, but I'm here for now.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Quorum.
Good morning, everyone. We'll jump right into our agenda for the regular meeting. Item number one, approval of minutes, letter A. Regular meeting held November 25th, 2025. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? If not hearing any, we'll have a motion to approve the minutes for November 25th, 2025. Do you have a motion?
This is Bill, I'll make the motion.
Good morning, Bill, thank you. Do you have a second?
Helly's a second.
Tim, Helly with the second. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve the minutes for the regular meeting held November 25th, 2025 passes. Moving on to item two, the Chief Investment Officer Report. Good morning, David and Eric. Who wants to go ahead?
Yeah, I'll start with a performance update. Morning, everyone. The fund ended the month of November with a value of $6.33 billion. The return is 0.9% for the month, outperformed the blended benchmark by approximately 52 basis points. The main drivers of relative performance within manager selection, we had a few private equity reports that actually came in, you know, earlier than usual, so they were reflected in November. You'll remember we don't reflect a benchmark return in November, so with those reports coming in and being reflected, that added 10 basis points to the fund's relative returns. DFA International added 7 basis points, and Earnest added 7 basis points. Public equity style bias also went in our favor, added 19 basis points. That was primarily from U.S. value. As you can see in the table to the right, the fund has outperformed the benchmark over the 5, 10, and 15-year time periods, while underperforming over the year-to-date 1 and 20-year time periods. As of December 22nd, the fund is up approximately 0.6% month-to-date, which brings the year-to-date return to up 12.5%, and the fund value to $6.37 billion. 7 out of the fund's 14 active mandates are outperforming year-to-date, and the fixed income and absolute return asset classes are outperforming their respective benchmarks year-to-date on a net a few basis. Year-to-date, we've seen a change in the value of investments of $744.5 million, received contributions of $247.9 million, and paid out benefits and expenses of $475.7 million. The fund has a sufficient cash balance on hand to pay benefits this month, so we won't be making any manager withdrawals. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to David.
Thank you, Eric. Any comments or questions for Eric? All right, not hearing anything. Thank you, Eric. Go ahead, David.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'll keep my comments to the high level, try to be concise. And when I look back at 2025, I think it was a great year. I mean, we really accomplished a lot. When I think how we started the year, talking about all those glide path conversations, all the meetings, all the important stuff we talked about there. We ended the year updating all of our investment policy statements. And in between, really, every asset class, every part of the fund was impacted in some way by all the stuff we did. We really did some important things. We accomplished a lot. I think we should all feel really good about that. And while all that was going on, the fund looks like it's going to have a really good year this year, over 12%, over $6.3 billion. You know, in this job, we're always looking forward. It's not a backwards-looking job. It's a forward-looking job. We expect to receive over $200 million in contributions over the next week and a half, next 2 weeks. Actuarially requires contributions. So over the last few months, I've been working on scenarios and analyzing how to deploy that money. I'd say that based on how the markets, the fund and the stock market have done over the last few months, this is one of the good scenarios that's certainly been playing out for that. Just talk about, just a reminder for returns for the fund. Our custodian doesn't actually finalize their books. Our funds return until the end of January. They have to wait until all the September 30th private equity statements come in. There's a few real estate statements that come in. We have to wait until our hedge fund statements for December 31st come in. So you'll be getting updates from us, correspondence from us over the next few weeks, but just to emphasize, those will all be preliminary until we tell their final, which there's a chance that will be by the January board meeting. If you're most focused on, things like funded status, actuary reports, audits, unfortunately, you have to wait until usually early June for preliminary statements for stuff like that, because the auditors and our accounting team, we all wait until the December 31st statements come in for private equity, for all the real estate. And some private equity statements we don't actually get until end of May, early June. So patience is required for that piece. That completes my prepared remarks. Thank you again for all of your support, for a great year, and happy holidays, happy new year to everybody. I'm happy to take any questions if there are any.
Thank you, David. Any comments or questions from David or Eric? Thank you both. Moving on to item three, the investment committee report. Go ahead, Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At our December 4th meeting, staff presented proposed updates to the fund's investment policies. Staff spent a considerable amount of time going over the proposed changes to the fund's statement of investment policy, which Cal and the city attorney's office and staff had been working on to update since first initiating the conversation with the committee this past June. Staff also presented proposed changes that it worked on with Callan that make sure the fund's real estate and private equity policies are up to date. After some discussion, the committee approved the statement of investment policy update, the real estate investment policy statement update, and the private equity statement of investment policy update. Next, Callan went over its 2026 work plan and presented a fixed income manager search and candidate profile, which Callan will rely on when it recommends investment manager finalists for the committee to consider for the core search that became necessary when the committee approved a new fixed income structure last month. After some discussion, the committee approved the fixed income manager search and candidate profile. Next, the committee discussed its thoughts on Bitcoin within the context of the cryptocurrency and blockchain education Callan provided in September. The committee wanted to provide clear direction to staff and Callan on the subject going forward. And after much discussion, the general consensus of the committee focused on two frameworks to think about Bitcoin, regulatory and investment. The city attorney's office, utilizing the help of outside legal counsel, was asked to monitor ongoing developments with respect to the regulatory and legal consideration that pension funds need to consider when contemplating an investment in Bitcoin, and to provide the board with an update at an appropriate time. If the board ever gets to the point that it's comfortable with the regulatory and legal environments with respect to Bitcoin investing, Callan and staff will evaluate Bitcoin like any other asset class when it makes asset allocation recommendations as part of the ALM studies it conducts every 3 to 5 years. Finally, staff provided a performance update for the fund and provided routine due diligence reports on Abbott Capital, Apogen Capital, Principal Global Investors, and Reams Asset Management. So in all, the investment committee recommends approval of the four items on today's agenda: the approval of the statement of investment policy update, approval of your real estate investment policy statement update, approval of private equity statement of investment policy update, and approval of the fixed income manager search and candidate profile. All rather large big ticket items. So that's the totality of my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Tom. I'll take one item at a time, but before that, any comments or questions for Tom or investment staff?
I think the entire board was there at the committee meeting, and there's no new developments that would impact these since our December meeting.
Great, now work through the motions to approve one at a time. For letter A, I'll make a motion to approve the statement of investment policy update. Do I have a second?
Tom, a second.
Thank you, Tom. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the statement of investment policy update passes. Next, I'll make a motion to approve the real estate investment policy statement update. Do I have a second?
Conrad seconds.
Thank you, sir. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the real estate investment policy statement update passes. Next, I'll make a motion to approve the private equity statement of investment policy update. Do I have a second?
This is Bill, I'll second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, the motion to approve the private equity statement of investment policy update passes. Finally, letter D, I'll make a motion to approve the fixed income manager search and candidate profile. Do I have a second regarding?
DeClean will second.
Thank you, sir. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve the fixed income manager search and candidate profile passes. Thank you, Tom. Anything else?
No, thank you.
Moving on to item four.
I would, I guess, jump in since it's an appropriate time to thank you for the opportunity to lead the investment committee for, I don't know how many years it's been, a couple of years, but it was a fantastic experience and I very much appreciated it. It's a very easy job with our staff, so all truth be told, I didn't do much, but just kind of sat at the front of the ship that David and Eric, Keith steered down and Tom steered down the ocean very well, and very much appreciated it. I learned a lot. I really enjoyed it, and I'm very happy that it ended on such a high note with so much work. They packed the agendas this past year just to mess with me. So
make sure they got all the time out of you.
It's a great deal. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Filled that role admirably, Tom. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on to item four, Administration and Operations Committee report. Good morning, Tim. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We held our meeting December 17th. We had a six-item agenda. First off, we did our internal audit report by Clifton Larson Allen. They did a vulnerability assessment. No critical vulnerabilities were found. We also have two approval items, agenda items for you. The request for proposal and a request for a quote for actuarial services. We also went through an IT project's portfolio update. Everything is in the green and on schedule. Jeff did a nice job there. And we also went through the 2025-2026 insurance program report. I just gave the insurance for our property or general liability, service security, and us as fiduciaries as well. That was a big chunk of the money that we spend on insurance every single year. Then we ended with a open position in the benefit services coordinator that we're trying to fill. So before you, we have the two approvals. Please my report.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. Any comments or questions for Tim before we move on to the approval items? All right, not hearing any, we'll move forward. Item four, letter A, I'll make a motion to approve the RFP for the internal audits. Do I have a second?
Ellen, a second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the RFP for internal audit passes. Item four, letter B, I'll make a motion to approve of the RFQ for actuarial services. Do I have a second?
This is Bill, I'll second.
Thank you, Bill. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, a motion for approval of the RFQ for actuarial services passes. Thank you, Tim. Moving on to item five, new business, letter A, retirement step claims and refunds for November 2025. Chair, you?
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in your packet, you have the normal monthly report on retirement death claims and withdrawals refunds for approval. This is the monthly payroll, and if there are any questions, we can take them now. Otherwise, a motion would be in order to approve the payroll for the month.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? All right, not hearing any, I will make a motion to approve the payroll for November 2025. Do I have a second?
4 seconds.
Thank you, Deborah. Good morning. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve payroll for November 2025 passes. Moving on to item five, letter B, conference requests for December 2025 board meeting. We have one request for David to attend Callen 2026 National Conference. That's in Scottsdale, Arizona. That's sponsored by Callen, of course. And the dates are April 20th to the 22nd of 2026. Estimated cost is $1,800. Any comments, David, regarding?
The agenda's not out well. It's a conference that Callen puts on annually. It's a great opportunity to, they usually have a great agenda. I don't think it's been finalized yet. It's a great opportunity to meet a lot of the people that work behind the scenes on our account, both that we see at meetings as well as people behind the scenes. And we usually have at least one representative in our organization in the past. And I think it's worthwhile use of time if the board supports me.
Absolutely. I know Callen is one of our big contributors, obviously, to what we're doing here, and I think it's more than necessary to get there. So thank you for spending the time away from your family and heading down there. So I will make a, are any comments or questions before we move to approval? All right, not hearing any, I'll motion to approve the conference requests for December 2025 board meeting for Mr. Silver to attend Callen 2026 National Conference. Do I have a second?
Yes, one second.
Thank you, Tom. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the conference request for December 2025 board meeting passes. Next is item five, letter C, approval of authorization to sign vouchers for incoming Executive Director Patrick McClain.
Mr. Chairman, this is a housekeeping matter. We normally deal with in January, but at the January meeting towards the end of the month, but since Patrick's coming on at the beginning of the month, we thought it appropriate that we do it right away. So we have authorization to sign the vouchers. Also included on this are Melody Johnson and Gus Petropoulos, our deputies, because they will be serving in the capacity of having to sign things if need be over the holiday season before Patrick takes office. So that's really all this is about, and we have a copy that, since we have so many wonderful faces present this morning in person, we can circulate and have them signed.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments or questions for Jerry regarding the authorization to sign vouchers for Patrick McClain? Not hearing any, I'll make a motion to approve the authorization to sign vouchers for incoming Executive Director Patrick McClain. Do I have a second regarding?
Helen, no second.
Thank you, Tim. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, the motion to approve authorization to sign vouchers for incoming Executive Director Patrick McClain passes. Moving on to item five, letter D, for referral to Legislative Committee regarding proposed Board Rules 2C6 and 7G2C.
At the last meeting, David, at the Investment Committee meeting, David indicated that this item would be coming forward. And the reason it's set up for referral is pursuant to the terms of the Board Rules, by its terms, any changes to the rules have to be reviewed by the Legislative Committee and approved by the City Attorney's Office before they're adopted by the full board. So this is an intermediary process step, just just a referral to the legislative committee, which is ad hoc committee, that will be impaneled next month or the month thereafter as convenient for the chair. So that's all this involved in this, but we do need a motion.
So a motion to approve the proposed board rules. Any comments or questions?
Well, it's approved referral to the committee, to legislative committee.
Yeah, so just so you know, what you see in the red line is the draft that will be circulated. It's been developed by the city attorney's office. It's just a draft. You're not actually approving these documents. It's just to give you an idea of what's being referred. Is that the right way to maybe?
Yeah, that's correct.
Great. Any comments or questions? I will move forward then with the motion. I'll make the motion to approve for referral to the legislative committee regarding proposed board rules 2C6 and 7G2C. Do I have a second regarding?
McLean will second.
Thank you, Justin. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any objections, motion passes. Moving on to item 5E, approval of resolution for retiring annuity and pension board trustee Tom Klusman. A resolution, whereas MPD Lieutenant Tom Klusman, retired, served with integrity, vigor, and distinction as a trustee of the annuity and pension board and the employees retirement system of the city of Milwaukee continuously from January 2014 through December 31st, 2025, and faithfully and conscientiously discharged his duties to solely represent the interests of all the members and beneficiaries of the system during his tenure of office. And whereas MPD Lieutenant Klusman's knowledge of pension benefits enabled him to make many valuable contributions to the annuity and pension board and the well-being of the employees' retirement system of the city of Milwaukee and its tens of thousands of participants, including and especially his diligent stewardship in pursuing adequate funding for the system. And whereas MPD Lieutenant Thomas Klusman served on the investment committee throughout his tenure of the board as committee vice chairman from 2020 to 2021 and the committee chair from 2022 through 2025, assisting in the development of the employee retirement system's strategic asset allocation, which has generated hundreds of millions of dollars of long-term returns in excess of its benchmark for the exclusive benefit of the system's members and beneficiaries. And whereas MPD Lieutenant Thomas Klusman exhibited the courage, discipline, and composure necessary to preserve the board's investment policy despite the global COVID-19 pandemic crisis and inflationary aftermath, and guide the system safely through perilous times with a steady, unwavering hand. And whereas MPD Lieutenant Thomas Klusman served on the Administration and Operations Committee from 2019 through 2024, and as a chairman from 2019 through 2020, and whereas MPD Lieutenant Thomas Klusman's departure is a great loss to the Annuity and Pension Board and all the members and beneficiaries of the Employee Retirement System, therefore be it resolved by the Annuity and Pension Board that is hereby expressed its deepest and sincere appreciation and gratitude to MPD Lieutenant Thomas Klusman for his invaluable, selfless, and loyal service, and be it further resolved that the resolution be recorded in the permanent records of this board and that a suitably engrossed copy be forwarded to MPD Lieutenant Thomas Klusman. This is adopted December 23rd, 2025. Before we go towards a motion, I'd like to offer you a chance to say some words. If you so wish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's very humbling and, you know, it's kind of weird that my name's on there because I, when you say it in that way, it's like, oh man, we did all that stuff over all these years. So I haven't prepared any remarks really, but I could go on for hours literally. So I guess my greatest gift to everyone would be to not, because you've listened to me far too long. So consider my brevity as part of my thank you. And I will just say that I could say so much, but in the very crux of everything I can say is I very much enjoyed my 12 years here. I was very fortunate to work with all of you, and honestly, you're the most talented group of people I've ever worked with in my entire life. And even though I'm retiring or leaving the board, I still have very vested interest in what you all do, because as a pensioner, I hope you keep paying me for the rest of my life. But that said, I'm leaving here with a very, very solid confidence, and I'm very happy, because it's the changeover. You don't see changeover, it seems, as of late, at least at this point in my life. Over my life, change seems to degrade. Everything gets worse. It's great that Jerry's able to retire, because if he's the big ticket item on this agenda, that he's leaving. I just kind of sat here and tried to help things along, but Jerry, we'll talk about him next. With Patrick taking over, I can't say enough about how happy I am about that. My replacement in this seat and your reelection, Mr. Chair, and David and Eric's staying forever because they promised me they would, and the rest of this board, I feel really good about the future of this fund. And I tell people that all the time, that we are very, very fortunate to have the people here, all of you, staff included, that, you know, doesn't come to these meetings. This fund, the ERS is just top quality from top to, I don't want to call it bottom, but all across, everybody that's involved in it, downstairs, the floor. So thank you for the opportunities to work the committees you've assigned me to and things you've asked me to do. And thank you to Dave and Eric for making my job easy. Like I mentioned earlier, they really did all the work. So thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Tom. Thank you.
That's short, by the way.
That's I'd say so over the years. That was pretty good. So any comments or questions from board members or staff?
Just have a last meeting, I promised Tom I had some critical remarks today. But by critical, I didn't mean a sense of criticism. I meant it was important that I make them. And listening to Tom through these meetings, I thought sometimes this guy must have read the packet three times, because if anything seemed off, even a comma, in the meetings of the previous meeting, he would point them out, which was really a testament to his discipline in study. The other thing is that Tom is not intimidated by expensive suits or fancy degrees. When we had presentations with money managers, if something was vague, confusing, incomplete, he wouldn't let him get away with it. He would ask him immediately, and that benefited all of us. And also sent a message to them that we're not going to really tolerate any kind of confusing or vague or incomplete presentation. And that benefited everyone. So I want to thank Tom for his role on the board.
Thank you, Rudy.
Thank you, Rudy.
And you're here.
Any other comments for the resolution?
Please just sign it. Don't write anything derogatory. We will circulate the parchment copy, the engrossed copy, as it says on the resolution. So don't sign this one.
I would just like to quickly say, if anyone else's comments, please. But I'd just like to say that stepping into this role can be quite intimidating as a trustee, and especially with you on the board, it was apprehensive. Based on your reputation of how thorough and knowledgeable and everything you brought to the table, was intimidating for a new trustee member. I have grown to appreciate the level of knowledge that you have, as well as other board members. The way that you could quote facts from the early 2000s that were important to our conversations over the years really amazed me, and your level of detail, like Rudy talked about, and just really like to thank you for your service and what you provided for this plan and moving forward. So
thank you, Matt. So,
with that, if there's no other comments or questions, there is a motion to approve, which I will make the motion to approve the resolution for retiree
annuity and pension board trustee Thomas Kleesman. Do I have a second?
Board sincerely seconds.
Thank you, Deborah. And I hope we have no objections. Not hearing any, the motion to approve the resolution for retiring annuity and pension board trustee Thomas Kleesman passes. Thank you, Tom. Moving on to item five, letter F, the approval of resolution for retiring ERS executive director and secretary Leonard Jerry Allen. A resolution, whereas Leonard Jerry Allen began his tenure as the executive director of the employee retirement system of the city of Milwaukee on February 18, 2008. And whereas Jerry Allen diligently and conscientiously served as the secretary for the ERS annuity and pension board and as a fiduciary for the plan and its members. And whereas during Jerry Allen's tenure, the ERS fund income was over $8 billion, in investment returns and contributions and pension payments exceeding $6.9 billion were issued. And whereas Jerry Allen was instrumental in cultivating and managing relationships with trade professionals, the Common Council, the city administrators, and plan sponsors on behalf of the plan. And whereas Jerry Allen successfully managed the ERS office by providing deep expertise in all aspects of the ERS operations, published annual financial reports and unqualified audit opinions, issued pension checks with no lapse in monthly payroll runs, navigated the staff through the global financial crisis and the COVID-19 crisis, implemented the mandates of several legal changes, including the establishment of a new tier of pension benefits in 2023 Wisconsin Act 12. And whereas under Jerry Allen's oversight, improvements were made to the ERS information technology infrastructure, including the management and enhancement of the Merits computer system, strengthening of the network security infrastructure, and the availability of technology tools to consistently manage all contributions and payments. And whereas Jerry Allen enabled the ERS staff to advance their careers via promotion and education. Whereas, after providing unparalleled expertise and service for over 51 years in benefits and retirement plan administration, Jerry Allen has decided to retire on December 31st, 2025. Therefore, be it resolved that this board, including former board members, on behalf of the membership that it represents and the ERS staff, express their deep and sincere appreciation and gratitude to Leonard Jerry Allen for his invaluable, selfless, and dedicated service. And be it further resolved that the resolution be recorded in the permanent records of the board and that a suitably engrossed copy be forwarded to Leonard Jerry Allen. Adopted December 23rd, 2025.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair and board members. I very much appreciate it. Serving the ERS retirement system and working with our staff and all the trustees been an honor of a privilege of a lifetime. It truly has. I came here after a long corporate career just to give some public service for about 4 or 5 years. That ended up being 18 almost. So, and I want to just echo what Tom said about, you know, serving. This is, even though I served with people on corporate pension boards, this is the most expert staff and board I've ever had the privilege to work with. It really is, with a lot more engagement than anything I ever saw in the private sector. So thank you, gentlemen and ladies. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Jerry. Any comments?
I know you will do well with Patrick. I can't be more delighted to have Patrick as my successor. He'll do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
For at least 18 and maybe 51.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, go ahead.
Knowing any praise I have would be redundant, because we've all shown our appreciation for Jerry, I think, through the years. So I'm going to share a little known fact. I first met Jerry in 1974. We were both working as summer interns at the Chicago Northwestern Railroad Law Department. And I only met him at the final party for the interns, and I didn't meet him again until he took his job. Somehow we both remembered. We didn't make a career there because if you went to the law library of the railroad, half the volumes were the records of their many bankruptcies. So it didn't seem too promising.
Thank you. Thank you, Rudy. Comments from other board members or staff?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead, Tom.
I would just like to thank Jerry for, I think Jerry has touched this fund in every way where he's had the hardest job, and, you know, Patrick is stepping into it now, is where you're involved in the hiring and the selection of all the people that make it all run. So even though you're just one person, you touch so many aspects of it that one person can't do it. You have to surround yourself with talent.
That's the fun part, actually.
Yeah, and that's, I think the point is that is we're talking about here is how this crew is so high caliber, and that's thanks to you as the head of it, we all are the lucky recipients, all of us members. And it's good that you're a member now, and welcome to the retiree group, because now you can retire. You're very, very much earned 51 years, and Jerry has some very interesting stories he's told me over the years about his career and life, and I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Those for the moment.
Yeah, those are interesting, but I told people, if nobody, you know, I talked to the retiree groups a lot, and when I talked to them, I told them that, you know, sadly, that you're retiring when you announced it, I announced it to them, and they all think the world of you because you've talked to them. They know you because you've come to their meetings and talked to them, so it wasn't just a name. So they were kind of shocked when you announced your retirement, and then I told them about the search we were doing. We were doing a national search, and our directives, I hope I'm not disclosing any secrets from closed session, but was to find someone like you, that we didn't want organizational change, we wanted someone with your attributes. And ironically, the person was in our own backyard, you know, so we did a national search and found a guy in the room, which was funny because, you know, I explained that to them, that we said we want the next best person on earth to take your spot, and we found that with Patrick, and you two get along so well, and it's great that you endorse your successor, because I think that says a lot to where this fund is going to go in the future. But none of that could happen if it didn't have such a solid grounding that you've created over these 18 years. I feel bad that I was around for 12 of them to make trouble for you. So you've done a lot.
You're
so
heavy on my toes.
but thank you. As I still, for the next, what, 4, 5, 7 days, have the mouth of the 13,000 retirees. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all you've done.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. Any other comments for Jerry?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Patrick.
I will echo everyone said and be brief, hopefully, which is not a great thing to hear coming out of a lawyer's mouth because it's almost never true. But when I first got assigned to ERS, I asked around about the assignment, and Jenny Yen, who you probably remember, did some work for the ERS almost 10 years ago, said, "You're going to love Jerry." And it turned out to be completely true, and I quickly learned it wasn't just me who loved Jerry, it was everybody. And doing Jerry's job, any job in city government, it's, I think, difficult to go a whole career and somehow end up in a way that everybody thinks fondly of you. So I'm going to miss you, Jerry. I'm going to miss our daily phone calls, probably half of which only were dedicated to work. I hope you don't lose the phone because I don't want to stop.
Yeah.
Thank you for everything, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick. Any other comments or questions? Not so much questions. Just briefly, I want to say, Jerry, again, stepping into this role as a new trustee and the way that you welcome new people with open arms and didn't hide information and hoard it. You shared it and you were open, and those daily, not daily, but weekly calls that we would share, I really valued those with the information, much like Rudy, Tom, you, the individuals that have spent years and years on this board are able to remember the data and the info and bring up things from decades ago. It's always amazing to me.
But what I really wanted to share, what I really appreciate about you, when we run into the true measure of a man and a woman is how they act when things get difficult. When we ran into those times, COVID, certain issues with financial groups, I always talk about this at work, integrity. If you make those decisions based on integrity and what you're hoping to accomplish based on your integrity, that never wavered in you. And every decision, tough decision we made or came across, or something happened to the plan or the staff or things like that, you've always had that integrity at the forefront of your decision making, and that always really stuck with me. So I just want to say thank you.
Matt, that's very high praise indeed. Thank you so much for your stewardship and your leadership. And for those who don't know, and I think everybody probably does, Matt has a very busy job. How many hours a week, Matt? Sometimes 20 to 24, believe it or not, per day. Family, and also an adjunct professorship at MATC. So I know you find time to do it, but thank you for your stewardship, Matt. I know you continue to do a great job for this board. And wield the gavel with equanimity, as you always have.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Any other comments before I put forward a motion to approve the resolution for retiring ERS Executive Director and Secretary Bernard Jerry Allen? Do I have a second, McGarry?
Tom, second.
Thank you, Tom. Any objections? Not hearing any, the motion for the approval of resolution for retiring ERS Executive Director and Secretary Bernard Jerry Allen passes. Moving on to item six, medical reports. Letter A, all duty and ordinary disability applications and reexaminations for December 2025.
Good morning, everybody. There are two reports before you today. They're rather brief. Medical Council Approvals Report, on which there's a new applicant, Santasha Harris, and a re-exam. Both are recommended for approval by the Medical Council for you. And then the other report is a Medical Council Denials Report. Ms. Harris applied for both duty and ordinary disability. Her ordinary disability application was approved, and the Medical Council is recommending denying her application for duty disability. And that completes those reports. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Thank you, Gus. Any comments or questions for board members or staff? All right, not hearing any, I will make a motion to approve the medical reports for December 2025. Do I have a second?
Plus on a second.
Thank you, Tom. Any objections regarding? Not hearing any, motion to approve the medical reports for December 2025 passes. Thank you, Gus. Moving on to item seven, unfinished business, letter A, pending legal opinions and service requests reports. Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are fairly well caught up on this report, especially after today's meeting. The only comment I will add is that, as this board knows, that first item, the collection of delinquent city agency employer pension contributions has been on this report for some time. But that is not an idle item in our office. We have frequent discussions about it. As the board knows, it continues to be a moving target. And while we don't have a written legal opinion, it is a matter that we are actively monitoring and discussing in our office. So we will continue to consult with ERS staff about it, and at some point we will have a product when we feel it's appropriate to present one.
And there is an update in the monthly report this month about the current situation
with
the housing authority. That sucks as well. Thank you. On service requests, the city attorney's office has been busy. You can see it on part three. We finalized the statement of investment policy review today. And they were, of course, instrumental in looking at that document. The internal services request RFP and the actual service RFQ also involved the city attorney's office and the board. Is not disposed of, but dealt with those issues as well today. So that's really all there is for service requests. on pending legislation, there is one item that's coming up before the state legislature. I won't go into detail here, but there was some discussion in my report about this. This would be a significant departure from current practice, long-held practice that the shareholders get to unimpaired vote for the boards of directors of the companies that they hold shares in, and also any shareholder proposals. And I'll get into that in more detail in the report, but it's a proposal before the state legislature, so it's a significant and a serious matter, I think.
Any comments or questions for Patrick or Jerry regarding? All right, not hearing any, then we will move on to item C, pending litigation report. Talk about that, Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No substantive change from last month. As I indicated then, we're basically in a holding pattern with all of our litigation cases. The three items that are listed under litigation are all at the Court of Appeals. They're fully briefed. Oral argument has occurred on one of them. Oral argument has not been requested or given on the remaining two, and we are essentially just awaiting a decision from the Court of Appeals. The only other thing that I will add, there was an additional administrative appeal hearing request that came in, I believe, after the reports were generated, so the board can expect to see two hearings listed next month.
Thank you, Patrick. Any comments or questions from board members or staff? Right, not hearing any, we will move on to item seven, letter D. Thank you, Patrick. This is the executive director's report, inventory of ERS projects.
Go ahead, Jim. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. This will be my final update, I guess. A good news item, the personnel update. Latoya Johnson's accepted the position of disability specialist senior, and so we'll begin to fill a vacancy that her current position leaves. And Latoya is filling a vacancy that was created by a promotion of the recent incumbent, Michelle Carr, who was promoted to another position. So it's always nice to see that when we have vacancies, we can fill them internally, and it creates an opportunity for development and growth for our staff. And so that's continuing on in this situation as well. On member services, we have retirees on the payroll for November 31, as expressed in the report, and we're expecting 18 anticipated for the December payroll. We did have some people who passed away this prior months in October, 25, and so that's the way we have new people retiring, and some other folks who've been enjoying the benefit depart from our world. We held the last retirement workshop for General City at the end of November on the 21st. We had good attendance, 81 attended. There'll be a new police recruit class, and that was started earlier this month on the 8th. And we're expecting approximately 40 new police officer recruits. That number kind of goes up and down as time goes by, but that was our estimate at the beginning of the month. We did, Mike Juke, our retirement plan services manager, attended the MPA Christmas party to answer questions on pensions, and a number of us went also to the MPSO party and got to shake hands with Tom and a number of the other folks there. And we're well fed, I might add. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have the breakdown of the benefit payouts for active and deferred in the chart below. If anybody has any comments or questions, feel free to make them. Financial services, we're continuing to work with CLA, Clifton, Larson Allen on the benefit calculation and the GASB 68 employer schedules audit. GASB 68 is where we allocate the financials to each individual participating employer so they can post them on their financials. And there's usually a one-year lag involved in that for the employers. And so we have to provide them with that information, and that's going forward. And Daniel, that audit is wrapping up this month, I believe, right?
Yes.
Okay. We also sent out the 2026 employer contribution letters to the city agencies this month, and All seems to be going well there with one notable exception we'll talk about in a bit. There was a new labor contract signed with the MPA. It was approved in November by the Common Council. And so we have to calculate when that happens retroactive adjustments to benefit payments, right? And for duty disability beginning for those folks in March, what we anticipate having a retro completed so that they'll get their retroactive lump sum payments. And then after that, we recalculate benefits for the remaining affected retirees, and we're targeting April for that completion. You know, some of the folks, the trustees who are from the public safety world may hear from members on that, and we can assure them that we'll be timely in April. I don't think we'll go beyond April. Everything is going great on information services, as Tim mentioned. Couldn't be happier with the way Jeff and his crew are performing. And they're even dialing down on AI, as we talked about a little bit in the operations committee, A&O committee. But they're also very much concerned about security, and so we'll be deliberate in what we do in that sphere. Then on administration, item five, Northern Trust did receive a $300,000 payment from Hackham in connection with their 2024 obligation they hadn't satisfied yet. They had been targeting $500,000 quarterly installments. However, the government shutdown interrupted their funding and caused more distress for that agency, and so they only paid $300,000, and that leaves them with a remainder for that period of approximately $600,000, that period being 2024. And of course, the 2025 contribution will be coming due at the end of this year. And so we've been working with their provisional temporary CEO to address this, and Dan has some comments. He's talked to him. We received the letter yesterday, which I forwarded to all the trustees. But go ahead, Dan. Why don't you give an update?
Yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah, so yesterday we received a letter from the interim executive director of ACRM, just noting that, you know, their intention to make good on their 2024 and 2025 contributions. In addition, they are planning to include those cash payments in 2026 on their 26 budget. So they're going back to their board and asking for approval to include those payments in the 2026 budget.
Thank you, Dan. And then the last item, this has to do with that proposal legislation I was mentioning. I received a request from the city administration to comment on a multi-state legislative proposal that includes the state of Wisconsin that would significantly, in my opinion, infringe on the securities ownership rights of the Seamers Trust. They're targeting the pension plans in the state, both our plan, the Wisconsin retirement system, and the county system. And this would affect the ability of the systems to vote the shares in annual meetings of corporations for the selection of their boards of directors and for any issues that come before the shareholders, that, you know, shareholder proposals, etc. And so they only gave us 2 days to look this over and comment on it. So David and Eric and Patrick and I, we all huddled and took a look at the proposed statute and made some comments and passed them along to the administration lobbyists on this. Now, as it turns out, in the legislative committee of the city council, they did not take this matter up. So it's still an open matter, and I would suggest that maybe the board continue to look at this further in 2026 and, you know, maybe hold our own legislative committee to decide what, if any, position the board would like to take on this and, you know, comment to the city administration. The city administration really has the obligation to lobby for all city matters. I think we can confirm that. Our pension board doesn't lobby the state legislature, but really what this does, it's a curious thing. The pension systems can still ostensibly vote their shares. However, there would be some strings that don't currently apply. There would be a safe harbor, so-called safe harbor, for any votes from the pension systems if you vote in favor of the company proposals, but not if you vote in favor of shareholder proposals. And also, if you vote against the company management, and actually it's the company board director's proposal, if you vote against them, then the state is going to do a back test after 3 years to see how the shares fared and, you know, report that after 3 years. It's a, like I said, it's a back test. And there's some potential for mischief there. The statute also allows the members of the fund to bring an action against the fund depending on the outcome of the reports of the state back test, right? So this is a little bit like voting in the Soviet Union. You can vote, but if you don't vote yes, then there will be consequences potentially, right? So this is a real departure from the economic system in this country that I refer to as shareholder capitalism, in favor of what looks to me to be like some creeping form of state capitalism. And that's, for those of you that are, you know, plugged into this sort of thing, that's the system they have in China, okay? They have state capitalism, they have capitalism, but it's controlled by the state. And so this looks like it's beginning to drift off in that direction, federal, control and ownership in major corporations. And there has been some activity already in this sphere, some instrumental industries, the tech industry and the defense industry. There's sharp elbows from the federal government, the current administration, pushing their way and making demands for ownership in these public companies to be granted ownership stake. I won't get into the nitty-gritty, but this battle is being fought at the sort of public relations level based on culture war issues to get attention, right? This is ostensibly to, you know, overcome any policies that our pension plans might have for ESG and DEI investing. Well, we don't have any such, nor do I believe the WRS does or the county have any such policies that mandate us voting in favor of DEI or ESG. But again, these are culture war red herring issues, and they can attract a lot of attention in the press and the electorate, and maybe that's kind of what's happening. But the real action underneath the surface is that this is the government, you know, beginning to impair our ownership rights in these companies. Although I'd be the first to say, and others can comment on this too, the outcome of share prices aren't going to likely be affected by any votes that our pension fund makes, or WRS for that matter, even though they're about 20 times our size. But it's just the idea that somehow the owners of the company don't have a free hand in selecting the board of directors that is a real departure from our tradition in this country, and it has an effect, I think, ultimately on the markets and on our economy, which would be felt directly by this fund in the end if it continues in that direction. So just something to keep our eyes on, and I think maybe when the legislative committee is impaneled next year, maybe we'll continue to monitor this and make recommendations to the city on what position to take. So thank you for your attention on that.
Thank you, Jerry.
And that's my report.
Yeah. Thank you. Any comments or questions for Jerry?
Other people may have different views on this subject. Anybody want to, Rudy, I know you are in a long-time shareholder. You have some thoughts about proxy voting, maybe?
Well, it seems to me that a law that tells you how to vote your proxy, you know, is really a seizure of your property.
Right.
The shares of your property, along with the rights the shares give you. I think that they're more concerned, their concern is that we actually don't vote them. You know, we'd have to be meeting every day to go through all the shares and figure out how to vote them, but we give them to an agency that we trust to cast votes that are in our interest.
Well, that's a good point, and David can give you some more details on that, but you're quite right. Our investment managers, thank you for mentioning that, our investment managers actually vote the proxies on our behalf, right? And, you know, our fund alone has, you know, we have thousands of companies in our portfolio, public companies that have, you know, shareholders meetings where we vote the shares. And so even our money managers, and not in every case, have the ability to do the analysis, to, you know, vote wisely. maybe some of the larger ones like BlackRock, okay, that one, they have a huge staff and a lot of assets under management. But they tend to take advice from proxy advisors. And those are the people who are kind of also the targets of this. There's two major proxy advisors. They're foreign-owned firms, and the allegations are that they tend to push companies towards what would be described fairly, I think, as social investing, right? Whether, you know, whether or not those merits, there's any merits on that, and there may be, it still ends up with what you said is, you know, impairing our ability to vote, you know, have our shares voted without any consequence from the state. And the whole idea of the state's going to look over your shoulder and see how you voted and whether that caused the shares to go up or down, it's just kind of outside our whole tradition. I'm sorry if I interrupted. But if anybody wants to know more about how proxies work,
Well, they're picking fights with these people who are voting proxies through agencies. And
right.
I mean, they could just say you can't delegate your right to, you have to cast your votes. And you can't give that right to somebody else unless you supervise them to some extent, which for us is just a lot of busy work.
That's where it starts, but I'm not sure where it ends, you know. The potential mischief is that the government is going to get heavily involved in selecting who's a director on a public company, right? And we've already seen demands for companies to give the government shares, in their, which could tend to dilute our interest and the interest of all the shareholders. So it's there's mischief about and just needs to be scrutinized, I think. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Rudy, any other comments?
Can I add? Yeah, I mean, I think there's really, Jerry's, there's really, the way I think about it is there's two real issues, and Jerry explains the first one extremely well, and Rudy, I think your train of thought is leading you to the second one. We really wouldn't be able to implement a state law that's as proposed. Jerry kind of mentioned, you know, at the end of the day, no matter, there's the political divide issue, but there's the practical piece of this. Our votes don't change the outcomes of this, but the cost of implementing this would be material. I mean, probably in the millions of dollars, and not immaterial. So then all of a sudden we're in this terrible position where we're imposed, the state imposes a law on us that has no practical impact on any outcome, but it costs us money to either to monitor, to administer, to perhaps pay investment managers higher fees to administer for us because now we're a more complex client.
If they'll still do it,
I mean, good point. And then there's the legal risk too, that you know, the state will be monitoring the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of votes that our shares ultimately, from the thousands of stocks we own, multiplied, if they have twice a year, quarterly, or four times a year votes, I mean, a fund like ours and many funds like ours, just, we would be overwhelmed by this. I mean, so there's practically no benefit, only cost to it. And that's, I think that should make everybody upset as well if we're ever put in that position.
It's a seemingly simple solution would be not to vote, right?
And that would probably be
the intention of the law, is to push the three plants not to vote. However, I'm not sure that's entirely risk-free, and Patrick might have, our policy says that we don't vote if there's a substantial excessive cost involved in it, right? And so that does actually happen overseas in some cases, as David has explained to me before. But we have fiduciary duty to vote. And, you know, I'm not sure that that defense would be 100% bulletproof. I don't know. So it kind of puts us in a position where there are fiduciary issues that could be raised, and we don't know what the outcome would be. So it just seems like this whole thing is kind of ill-conceived. Probably just a partisan move, or hopefully it'll die, I don't know. But it bears watching, I think.
Go ahead, Tom. One of the things that jumps out at me, this is kind of scary, if I'm understanding it right, is this three-year look-back thing. Is that, like, they're going to look back to see how your decision played out, and then criticize and weigh you based on how things transpired? That's information you didn't know at the time. It's kind of the opposite of what cops always argue about when the cops get situations that go awry, and they want to be judged on what they knew at the time when they acted, not what was found out later. But this is the exact opposite of that, where they're going to hold you, you make your decision, we'll look back, and then we're going to hang you for the crime that you didn't know you were committing.
Well, it seems like it has the potential for that. That's what it seems to say in the language. In Russia, in the battle days in the Soviet Union, the head of the KGB later was the former head, said, famously or infamously, show me the man and I will show you the crime. Okay? In other words, we can get anybody we want to, right? That kind of government intrusion in our lives is not something we come to expect in this country. I know it was rich believing that would be a risk here. So I'm not sure it would go that far, but it seems to open the door in that direction. So what I can do is forward a copy of the draft statute, and there's a couple of emails from legislators that explain what this is all about. And you can take a look at it and see what you think and talk it over. I won't be around, but Deborah is the chair of that committee, and she's quite able to, you know, monitor this and conduct a discussion about it.
Good thing you and I won't be going to jail for this stuff.
just because we're growing doesn't mean they're not coming for us.
It's very simple. It's just vote for the management proposal or we'll be looking at you.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the Soviet approach, you know. Yeah. You just vote for the great leader and everything is fine.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I'll just add that Wisconsin is not alone in this. This is happening in other states as well. In fact, a similar law, not an identical law, has also already passed in Texas and I think Kentucky. And it was vetoed in Kentucky but overridden by the legislature, and there's an ongoing lawsuit in Texas challenging the law on a number of bases. So this, even if this legislation comes to fruition, I wouldn't expect that to be the end of it. I think there's going to be a pretty staunch opposition to this type of measure.
Well, that's another aspect. You know, I talked to Hank Kim, who's the executive director of our trade association, and CPERS, and he assured me that this is a multi-state effort. It's being pushed by ALEC, which is the American Legislative, I don't have the acronym quite right, but it's not a think tank, but it's a legislative action group that operates nationally. They were the ones that drafted Act 10, for example. So they're active in this space, and the SEC at the federal level is involved in this as well. And like Patrick said, there's some challenges going on in Kentucky, right?
I can't remember if it was Texas or
Kentucky.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That just flipped the states then.
So we haven't heard the end of it. Anyway, enough said. Not the most important part of the meeting, I guess, but just want to make sure.
Mr. Chair, this is Bill. I just got a quick question.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
So is the city's Intergovernmental Relations Division, are they at this point pushing against this, or are there any other advocacy groups that are pushing against this here in Wisconsin at this point?
Well, I think the best this is the reason they sent me an email asking that the ERS evaluate this as on 4 points, and the first one was, did it apply to us? Yes, it does. So, as I mentioned, Bill, we only had 2 days to draft a response. We gave them a quick response, and they thanked us for it. I gave them some articles from the Financial Times, and there was something else in the Wall Street Journal and a couple of other publications. So they have that material, but it was not taken up by the council at this point in the legislative committee. Mary was following that, and they had a meeting just a week or so ago, and there was no discussion on this point. So it's still an open question, I think, across the street with the administration. There's ample opportunity, it sounds like, for this group to, you know, decide what you think about it and to advise the council, because that's actually one of the duties of the charter is for the board to advise the council on pension-related legislation. So it sounds like it's not moving that fast. You'll have a chance to weigh in on it. And there's another group that we subscribe to. It's called the Council of Institutional Investors. Their whole emphasis for many years now has been what they refer to as say on pay, okay, which looks out for shareholder interest for excessively expensive executive compensation packages by the companies that they own shares in. And actually, that might have had something to do with this initiative. There was a sort of a proxy fight over a notorious compensation package for Tesla, the so-called trillion dollar, removed from billions to trillions apparently in that case. And so there was an adverse, now that package ultimately went through, but there was an adverse reaction to it by folks who thought that pension plans shouldn't be steering these discussions through their proxy votes, and that might have a lot to do. There's a lot of speculation in the trade press that that's why this legislation has been enacted. Too many nosy pension plans wanting to say things about the companies they own, which is amazing when you think about it. So my point I'm trying to make here is that this organization, the Council of Institutional Investors, also has a stake in this, and we're members of it. So we have an opportunity to speak to them as well about it.
Okay, thank you. And I guess
if you wanted to, Bill. They our trustees don't usually go there, but staff and trustees are invited to attend their meetings. You could, at some point, if you wanted to, participate.
Yes, thank you. That sounds interesting.
Thank you, Bill. Anything else? Comments or questions? All right, not hearing any. Thank you, Jerry, for the Executive Director's report. Moving on to item 7, letter E, discussion about proposed in-person quarterly board meetings. So this came up, asked to be put on the agenda. Just wanted to have a discussion with all stakeholders involved about how we want to move forward for meetings in 2026. Definitely open to board members or staff for the discussion. I'll hold my position or ideas for after. Others, any feedback regarding?
I think it'd be a good idea. Once a quarter would be fine.
Okay. Once a quarter?
Yeah, I think the proposal's for discussion. I think it's a good idea. We kind of got ourselves into this because of COVID. And then we learned that it seems to work pretty well, and we get better attendance. Mm-hmm. So then it's worth discussing. And we can even have a hybrid if somebody just can't make it. They can always do it like we're doing today. So
thank you, Rudy.
Yeah, like I suggested in the schedule, just put suggested in person. And
I'll leave out
lunch plans after or something like that. Mm-hmm. Get people to come.
I'll leave out the ones that are leaving us from the decision-making process. I'm leaving you out.
Well, the meetings are technically hybrid now.
Okay.
People can come, and I think this is a request to sort of informally, or maybe formally, say at least once a quarter we should meet in person. Those that can, there are always folks that are unable to because they're out of the office and they can call in.
But currently, you know, unless you say that, you know, this is a suggested or an in-person meeting, unless you have some reason not to be there. Because with the current one, you can come, but there's no one here. There's three people here, so why bother?
Right.
But if you know, most of the board is going to be there, then I think you'll have more enthusiasm for coming.
And I know it also came up possibly quarterly for the board meetings, and then I got to thinking too with David as far as the investment committee meeting. I think maybe if we came up with two of those meetings where we could potentially have a more robust schedule for maybe for some of the financial discussions we have to have. Do you have any thoughts, you and Eric, regarding that?
I would agree. I mean, I think that there's definitely some conversations, whether it's the agenda type topic or maybe it's a manager presentation or something like that, where I think we do lose something when, I mean, yeah, just in the communication, when it's all virtual and blank screens, I mean, for the presenters and things like that. So, I mean, staff is here. I think it is a board and committee decision, discretion at the end of the day, but we're supportive and we think it's worthwhile to think about doing.
Just talking like before and after the meetings and during breaks, you know, just right here, you know, it's like so informative. It's just the meeting ends and click, you know, it's like, oh, okay. You really say goodbye. It's just like, all right, it ends. There we go.
Justin, any thoughts?
I would agree. I think it's a good idea to meet in person. I do on my other board all the time, so we don't do those virtually ever. So, but yeah, I think it's a good idea too.
Patrick?
Yeah.
Thank you, Justin.
Yeah, this has been, I guess, ironically, as one of the few who's remote today, but yes, I would be in favor of meeting in person quarterly. I mean, it's very easy for me. I'm right across the street. But yeah, I would be in favor of this.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, I think David and I are of the same mind that, you know, I do think that remote meetings provide flexibility that's oftentimes helpful to trustees, but I also think that in-person meetings are important and useful. And so I think quarterly is a good place to start if that's where the temperament of the board is. And then if that's working out and everybody's enjoying it, we can discuss making it more frequent.
Thank you.
I would offer just, you know, for what it's worth, is pre-COVID, I know I missed at least one meeting because I was out of the country or out of town and I couldn't come, and there was no stream from Gary, and then COVID created this, and then after, since we've been doing this hybrid, I've been out of the country even, and I was able just, all you got to do is find a Wi-Fi signal and still, you know, even when you're on vacation, you can take an hour or two out and go sit somewhere, and which I did, and participate if you want to, which I always did. So I think this encouraging the meeting as in person, but keeping the stream open for those that have something is very valuable, so don't cut the stream off, but encourage, because I do like the face-to-face also, like Tim said, so thanks.
Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you, Tom.
I should add that, yeah, the in-person meetings, I think, should be kept hybrid. So I also think that allows any beneficiaries or interested parties who want to access the discussions of the board. It's also, I think, particularly helpful for them as well. So, yeah, I would, even the in-person meetings, I think we should keep a remote component to it as well.
As a historical point of information, prior to COVID, the city charter did not allow for hybrid meetings. You could only vote in person, you could only attend in person. But of course, the law has changed because of the hands.
That's right.
Mr. Chair?
At that time, you would have to just use a telephone.
Yes.
No, I think, yeah, I participated in one meeting from Stockholm, Sweden. I was there thinking, this is amazing.
I like the flexibility of hybrid. I mean, I think, I like the idea of periodically meeting in person because, to be perfectly honest, there are several trustees who I've never seen, which I think is problematic. I know their voices, I do not know what they look like. But I also appreciate the efficiency and the availability of being able to do remote meetings, because there are occasions when I would not be able to attend for one reason or another. There's also, not just this meeting, but overall, I always found it much more efficient and attendance better when you offered the remote, because the time spent driving there, finding parking, leaving, all of that, to me, is better used focusing on the meeting. So But I like the idea of periodically meeting in person.
Thank you, Deborah.
But I'd like to keep the hybrid. Okay.
Great, thank you. Any other comments before I close? Like most of these discussions, everything is already said by the time it gets to me. So the only thing I want to point out is that what I'm super proud of from this team of staff and board members is that the attendance is incredible, as well as our many decisions that are usually unanimously made together through discussion. And I think with the hybrid system, that really benefits attendance, like everyone has said. So I won't belabor the point, but I think that that's really led to having both, being able to attend both ways. And if it's okay with everybody, I can move forward in early January and contact, get in touch with Patrick and David and kind of pick those meetings where we might have some unique presentations and things to discuss where it would probably be better in person. We can kind of handpick the ones we want to do in person or promote the in-person option more so than other ones, if that's okay with the two of you.
Absolutely.
I have a question for David. When you have money managers presenting, or people who are, we usually interview three or four, they're kind of used to being remote too. So how are they going to react?
You know,
are they going to be flying in from New York, or?
You know, I'd say it depends on the money manager. I mean, it's something that comes up in our, even if we're just on a due diligence, or just if somebody's just more of an informal meeting with client service there. I think they have, I mean, would you say that it's for the, we're maybe unique and that we don't have any?
Yeah, I mean, like I think, I mean, for example, this fixed income search that we're going to have coming up, if we tell the candidates, we want you to come present in person, they absolutely will. They're going to be, you know, excited to do that. Yeah, and I think, you know, I meet with managers from time to time that are in Milwaukee because they have a presentation to some other board. So it's, yeah, I think we're back to, you know, we're not, we wouldn't be out of line by asking a manager to come present to us in person.
It's a little tricky because if you're asking them to do that, then somebody has to be here too.
Yeah, I want to have them fly out and present to just staff.
Well, the first comp board has that quarterly, it only meets quarterly, the full board. At the end of the pandemic, they resumed quarterly in-person meetings. And that seems to go well. And we always have at least one, well, a couple of the vendors, including money managers, attend in person. And we have, they have the same, some of the same managers. We have Readings, for example. And we have Invesco, which we don't have here. But Invesco always comes every quarter. We have an investment committee. It's called the Executive Finance Committee. And those presentations are typically remote, and the managers do present remotely, but many of the vendors come to the quarterly board meetings. JP Morgan always has somebody there, and Invesco, and of course the record keeper Boya is there every time. So it works out.
I'll just pipe in with one, not to belabor this, but one real life story that actually happened to caution yourselves for. When I was brand new to the board, we were doing a manager search for something, and one candidate sent a guy from, and he was not a client services person, he was the actual math guy, so he wasn't like, you know, polished, and he came in from Australia, and he sat down, and the chair at the time told him, okay, you got 20 minutes, and he kind of face washed out, and then he was, you know, kind of gave us his spiel. And it wasn't the greatest, I get it. But then when we discussed it, some of the board members said, well, he was kind of a jerk. And I was like, I would have like thrown this something at you people. The poor man was on that plane for probably 12 hours next to some crying baby. Lands here, and then you tell him he's got 20 minutes. I would have like been, you know, I would have been much more animated than him. I thought he handled himself pretty well, but yeah, if you go back to calling these people in, just be careful so that never happens, because I thought, man, the CRS is one cold group. And it's not, nobody here was, you know, on the board. It was a totally different board, but I thought, oof.
Yeah.
You got 20 last year. You know, we had a luncheon, the employees had a luncheon for me a couple of weeks ago, a potluck luncheon. And Aaron from our actuarial firm drove 12 hours from Omaha to attend in person. Can you imagine that?
I've driven to Omaha, it's the most boring thing.
Well, thank you, I think we have a good roadmap to move forward, and I'll be in contact, you know, it struck me in this meeting quickly, when we were all sitting around at that meeting for, right when the COVID shutdown happened, and we were waiting for a manager to show up in person, and obviously they did not show up that day. And, but I remember just thinking now about the difference between what that would have been like on the phone compared to all of us staring at each other as this monumental event was going on for the fund. And, that was kind of a unique thing to be in person for, so it just kind of struck me today, thinking about that memory. Great, then we'll move forward with that and come up with maybe, discuss some of the meetings that are not more important than others, but where some of the presentations would be more conducive to face-to-face, and then we can go forward with the schedule. Sounds good. All right, so that completes item 7, letter E. Moving on to 8, the informational. Items A through G, any comments or questions for board members or staff? Not hearing any, item 8, informational A through G can be placed on file. And if there's not any comments or questions, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting. Prior to making the motion, just like to wish everybody a great break here for the holidays and be safe, and we'll hit the ground running in January. I will make the motion to approve, to adjourn the meeting today.
Please, I'll second.
Thank you, Justin. Any objections? Not hearing any, the motion to adjourn the meeting passes, and it is 10:28 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Before everybody leaves, I'm reading.